ॐ साईश्वराय विद्महे सत्यदेवाय धीमहि तन्नः सर्वः प्रचोदयात्। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।
सैराम एंड वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू टू दिस फिफ्थ डे ऑफ द नवरात्रि सीरीज ऑफ लेक्चर्स एंड आई हैव द प्लेजेंट ड्यूटी टुडे ऑफ इंट्रोड्यूसिंग द स्पीकर फॉर द डे। And yesterday when the public relations officer, Mr. Murali, he asked me, he said, you need to introduce Arvind to the audience. And the first question that came to me was, why? Among the voices, names and faces of those who are engaged in the sacred duty of spreading Swami's message, we have Arvind Balasubramanian, who is definitely one of the most outstanding ones. And as many of you might know, he has been from 2011 regularly maintaining blogs in which he shares his experiences and others' experiences of the time when the avatar walked on this planet. And subsequently they have been made into books. His first book that he released was The Memoirs of a Sai Student, and then he went on to release Capturing Divinity, and both of them have been very well received by the Sai community, and many have enjoyed it and benefited from reading these two books. And so he has been inspired to release another book. He is on the verge of completing it, and it is titled Living with God, where he shares the experiences of 18 students and teachers who are working at the Sri Sathya Sai educational institutions. So the book is slated for release during the birthday week. He is also known to many of us as the co-host of the very popular program on Radio Sai called the Afternoon Satsang. So this also has received very good reviews from people all over the world. Those who have listened to it have come back with reviews that it has enlightened them on many of the problems that they are facing. Many of these experiences and teachings that he relates to all of us through the medium of his talks, through the medium of his blogs and his writings, they're all derived from his personal experiences. His family has been lucky to be associated with Bhagwan from several years. Perhaps some of you might know, his father was one of those who were very fortunate to photograph and thus catalog Swami's, you know, years during the 80s, 70s and the 80s. And he comes from such a family. He indeed has been fortunate to accompany Bhagwan on several trips. When Swami visited Bombay Harshi in 2009 and subsequently to Delhi and Shimla. So he has had a very close association with Swami. He has been able to observe Swami at very close quarters, and Swami also has blessed him with a lot of grace and a lot of love. So where he speaks from is indeed from his heart. And that is the topic that he is going to share today about. The topic he has chosen to speak is Hridaya Nivasini. He is extolling the Divine Mother as the one who resides in the heart. Yesterday we spoke about prema, and we saw that the love that we spoke about yesterday was something that transcends, surpasses anything that we know on earth. And the only way that we can understand such topics, such abstruse topics, is by contemplation, which is why the elders, they advise us always to contemplate on the teachings of a guru. And here to lead us in that, here to do that for us, is Sri Arvind Balasubramanian. I request Arvind to take the stage. Sai Ram.
सत्यस्वरूपिणि मां साई प्रेमस्वरूपिणि मां आनन्ददायिनि हृदयनिवासिनि பர்த்தி நிவாசினி மாம். I offer my most humble, loving and reverential salutations at the lotus feet of the Divine Sai Ma, Divine Mother, Swami, who is the embodiment of truth, Satya Swarupini, who is the embodiment of love, Prema Swarupini, who is the resident of Parthi, Putta Parthi, more so the resident of the heart and the bestower of bliss. Hridaya Nivasini Anandadayini. Tomorrow's topic is Anandadayini. Today's topic is Hridaya Nivasini. It's tough to separate the two because they are two sides of the same coin. So forgive me if I will be leading on to tomorrow's topic and coming back to today's topic every now and then. Today is the day that is set aside for the worship of Devi as Katyayini, also known as Mahishasura Mardini, the one who annihilated the demon Mahisha. Mahisha means a buffalo, and the story itself has so much deep inner significance, where the buffalo is black in color and represents tamas, sloth. So as we embark on the spiritual journey, it is very essential that we have to annihilate tamas. So offering salutations to that aspect of the Devi. If we visit the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum, you can actually see Swami in 9 different forms with 9 different colored robes made as an exhibit. It is supposed to stand for these 9 forms of the Mother that are venerated during the Devi Navaratri. Just as we have 9 different forms of the Devi standing for 9 different aspects, the bhajan that I just began with venerates Swami as the Divine Mother with 9 different qualities, one of which is Hridaya Nivasini. So with humble salutations to Swami, I pray to Him to speak whatever is essential for all of us today. The great saint Kabir Das, in one of his dohas, doha is a couplet, he writes, Kasturi kundal basai, mrugadunde banamahi, aise ghat ghat ram hai, dunya dekhe nahi. He is trying to describe to the world how and where to find God, what is God. So he makes use of this metaphor. He says, a man in search of God is like a musk deer in the forest that is searching for the fragrance of musk. The musk deer is enamored by this fragrance and it wants to find out the source. It travels everywhere in the forest. And because the musk emanates from its own navel, wherever it goes, it is able to smell the musk. And it feels, you know, the scent of the musk is everywhere in the world. It is all pervasive, it's omnipresent. Searching and roaming and moving, going all around the forest, finally it is tired. It just sits and then lies down to rest. You might have seen how a deer curls up when it sleeps. When it curls up, its nose comes near its own navel. And then it discovers that, you know what? The scent, the sweet scent of musk that has been guiding my life all the while, all through the day, is actually emanating from me. The journey becomes complete. Begins from oneself, ends in oneself. That is the completion of the journey. I feel that is the significance of this topic, Hridaya Nivasini. Because whether we accept it or not, whether we are conscious of it or not, all of us throughout our life are on this quest of divinity. We are seeking divinity. And our quest ends where it actually began. It is like the Olympic race, you know. They all stand on the track, on your mark, get set, go. And all of them start running. And their object is to get away from the point of origin as fast as possible. That is their goal, you know, get away, because we have to go. That is only the start, we have to end. But when they finish the race, they see that they are exactly back at the starting point. They have not moved even 1 centimeter away. The beginning and the end of the race is the same. That's why Swami says, if you don't know where you are headed towards, at least know where you came from. Know either the source or the destination, because ultimately you will realize that the source and the destination are the same. The question that I used to often ask myself is, when we say God is the indweller, God resides within us, when we discover this theoretically at least, like the way the musk deer discovers, why do we call God the indweller of the heart? Why don't we say that God is the resident of the lungs? Or God is the one who resides in the stomach? Why do we choose the heart? What is this heart? See, God is there in every cell, every organ, every part of the body. In fact, when we chant the food prayer, Brahmarpanam, there is a stanza which is Aham Vaishwanaro Bhutva, which means I am present as the Vaishwanara, the fire, the digestive fire in your stomach. The fire of digestion in our stomach is God. So why don't we call Him as the resident of the stomach? What is this about the indweller of the heart? What is the heart? Is it that 4-chambered, 2-auricle, 2-ventricle with the aorta, organ pumping away blood to the lungs? I thought that let me embark on this journey in trying to understand what is this Hridaya. When we say Swami is the Hridaya Nivasini, when Swami is the resident of the heart, what is this heart? It has often happened, you know, because in discourses Swami says, don't listen to the mind, listen to the heart. What is the difference? Sometimes you get the question, what is the difference? How do I know this is my mind speaking or my heart speaking? Does the heart speak? What is this heart, which is supposed to be the residence of God? Swami says, heart is a single seat sofa. Keep only God a place in the heart. Don't give anything else a place in the heart, because nothing else deserves a place in the heart. Only Lord deserves a place in the heart. What is the heart? Swami, if I don't know what is the heart, what do you mean when you say what, the heart? How will I know, how will I understand what it means to give you a place in the heart? With inspiration from Swami, I was guided in my search for this answer to the Bhrugavalli in the Taittiriya Upanishad. The Bhrugavalli is very, very interesting. It's very fascinating. It is about the search for God that Bhrugu embarks upon. He goes to his father Varuna and he says, Father, teach me about Brahman. The father, you know, it starts like that. Bhrugurvaivarunihim varunam pitaramupasasara adihi bhagavo brahmeti tasma etat provacha. So he goes and asks, Father, tell me about Brahman. Now the father is wise. He knows that Brahman is not something that can be communicated. Brahman has to be discovered. Brahman has to be experienced. So he tells his son to devotedly engage in penance. He says, go engage in penance. You will get to know who Brahman is. You will get to know what Brahman is. And thus, the son, Bhrugu, goes and begins his penance. After a long duration of time, he comes back to his father and says, Father, I have discovered who is Brahman. Who is Brahman? He says, Annam Brahme Divya Janat. He says, Father, food is God. Annam Brahma. Good. That is true. You know, if we look at life, look at this miracle that is happening every day before our lives. Even as we are sitting here and breathing, thousands of cells are dying and falling off. Hair falls off. Bones are getting eroded. Blood cells are being destroyed. So much of destruction is happening in our body, and yet we are alive Because constantly the body is regenerating itself. Cells are being created. It is only when the rate of destruction exceeds the rate of creation do we call it old age, which finally leads to death. But till then we are alive. How is this process happening? Because of food. Mechanisms have been studied in great detail. How food is converted into energy, which is converted into everything that constitutes our body. It's amazing, we have studied how two single cells in the womb of a mother over a span of 9 months become a miniature human being. Why a human being? Become a miniature deer, miniature tiger, miniature elephant. It's amazing. And though we have studied it in great detail, how much our food is supplied to the greatest of scientists, they cannot create. They cannot create a human body, they cannot create an elephant body. It has to be done through some miracle alone. And miracle is possible only by God. Food is God. Food is creating that miracle. Food is doing that miracle. It's ensuring that only an elephant baby is born to an elephant and not a tiger baby to an elephant. Though every way it is similar, the same proteins, the same chemicals. It's amazing, it's fascinating. How much ever, you know, it's like quantum theory. Niels Bohr said, the more I understand quantum theory, the less I understand of it. That is how God is. The more we understand, the more we get fascinated. Oh my God. And that is what Bhru comes and tells his father. Father, food is God. That is what even Swami tells us. Annam Brahma. That is why in his discourses, Swami exhorts. When you have food, have peaceful thoughts. Have sattvic food. You have no idea how your personality, your nature, your emotion, everything is being determined by the food you eat. We only, you know, when Swami says refrain from non-vegetarian food, we speak about the proteins that are available there. Swami always speaks about the subtle proteins. You are looking at the nourishment of your body, what about your mind? And that is why sattvic food is prescribed. And when it comes to that, Swami speaks of not only the food, you know, not only the food that is being cooked. Swami, paka shuddhi, padartha shuddhi, the purity of the person who has grown the food, the thoughts of the person who is selling the food, the vessel in which the food is cooked. If that vessel belongs to a thief, Swami narrates a chinnakata, where a sannyasi visits the home of a householder and as he is eating the food, he looks at the silver tumbler that is kept and he feels, let me pick it up. He picks it up. The host notices it but doesn't say anything. And then when he goes, he feels, what is it that I have done? I am a sannyasi. I have given up all my wealth. And here I am coming and taking a silver tumbler. He goes back and returns it and he apologizes for it. But Swami says that householder was actually a jnani who tells him that it is not your fault. The food that has been served to you was grown by a farmer who stole it from somebody. Now when you see all this, you will wonder, Swami, now what can I do? People often say, you know, to ensure that the food is pure in its vibrations, they say that we will cook our own food. There are people who do that. They won't eat in hotels. They won't eat outside the home. They cook their own food. Some people, they slightly agree, okay, I need not cook, but somebody from the family only, I trust my wife, I trust my parents or whatever. So family should cook, I'll eat only that. But even if I'm cooking my own food, now do you mean to say I should grow my own food? Actually, if you look at the hermitages where the sages lived, that is what they used to do. They used to grow their own food. So they have tended to it with love. From everything, from watering, from the seed till eating, they would do on their own so that the vibrations are pure. Kali Yuga, it is not possible now. We have to buy packaged food. Now we even buy vegetables which are chopped and ready in the freezer. We just have to pick and cook, thaw it and eat. Ready to eat curries we get. Just dip it in hot water for 10 minutes, cut and eat. So Swami, the loving Lord, gives a shortcut. He says, because food is God, at least offer the food to God. Chant the food prayer. When you chant and offer it to God, it becomes prasadam from God. It becomes the Lord's offering to you. That is what happens, right? We take a garland, put it on God. After some time, take a flower from that and take that as prasadam. Because it has been sanctified by the Lord's touch. The same thing with the food. That is why Swami insists on the food prayer. Because we cannot be sure of the quality of the food in terms of the vibrations. We can purify the vibrations via prayer. And so Bhrigu comes up with this good answer. He says, Father, I discovered Brahman. Brahman is food. Father says, no, go. Do more penance. Because food is not the answer. Food is God. Yes, food is God. But God is subtler than food. And thus, Bhrigu sets out on his penance again. He does penance completely. And he comes back again after so many years. Now he comes to his father and says, Father, I have discovered that there is something subtler than food. That is God, that is divine. You see, though it is food that creates a baby in the womb of the mother, how many times we have seen that the baby is born still? A stillborn. The same food provided. The same care taken. Yet one baby is alive, the other is not alive. That is what Bhrigu comes and tells his father. Father, it is not food. It is a life force, pranam. Pranam brahme tivya janat. Not annam, pranam. Because annam may create the body, but if the life force doesn't come. In fact, that is the reason why scientists are not able to create life, because they don't know exactly what is this life force. When it enters, when it exits. A man's body is exactly the same 1 second before death and 1 second after death. And yet, a person whom you call as father, uncle, mother, sister, son, daughter, 1 second later you refer to that same as the body. Move the body, put it here. From he or she it becomes it. What is missing? Only that pranam, life force. Life force is God. Swami narrates the story of the Pandavas, you know. When the Pandavas are going to become grandfathers, when the baby is delivered, it's a stillborn. Arjuna's grandchild, Abhimanyu's son, is born still. And therefore, there is nobody to continue the lineage of the Pandavas. And they start weeping. They go to Krishna, telling Krishna, our whole lineage is gone. Krishna says, why? He says, no, there is nobody to continue. Krishna says, what happened to the baby? Krishna picks up the baby, you know. And in fact says, wow, how beautiful it is. The eyes are like Abhimanyu. The nose is like Abhimanyu, wow. Lips are like Abhimanyu, see? It's a replica of Abhimanyu. And Arjuna cries and says, yes, Krishna, even its breath is like Abhimanyu because it is not there. Abhimanyu is dead and so is the baby. Is it? And even as Krishna asks the question, the baby begins to wail. And as the baby wails, Arjuna falls on his knees and says, oh, Vamshodharaka. Vamshodharaka means the emancipator of our vamsha, of our clan. In fact, Swami mentions a little additional point there. At that time, he says, Krishna tells him, Arjuna, you don't call me like this. If you remember 7 days before on the battlefield when Abhimanyu died, you came and called me Vamsha Nashaka, the destroyer of my clan. And today you call me the emancipator of your clan. Make up your mind, Arjuna, what am I? Because you go through the ups and downs. The Lord is always the same. Anyway, the Lord has that ability. It was during the Pathamandiram days, 1950. The inauguration of Prashanthi Nilayam was not yet done. And Swami was in the Pathamandiram. That was the time when Swami's sister went into labor. And there were some complications and they were all worried because there was no doctor nearby. And Swami said, I will come for the delivery. They said, how is it possible? How can a male come into a delivery room? You have to remember, at that time Swami was in his 20s. A lad, in fact. So Swami said, no, I will not come into the delivery room. I'll do one thing. You take her into this room. It was not a delivery room in the sense there was no, it was not a hospital delivery room. A room which has been designated for delivery, that's all. So Swami said, I shall put my foot into the room and close the door on my foot. You do the delivery there, it'll all be fine. I think it was somewhere on the 14th of January in 1950. This is what happened. And Swami put his foot, he had closed the leg on his foot and he was standing there. The delivery happened. The baby girl born was fine. No problems at all. The interesting thing is, Swami said, I will name the baby. They said, okay Swami, what do you want to name the baby? Swami said, name the baby Samrajya Lakshmi. They thought that they had heard it wrong. They said, Swami, do you mean Swarajya Lakshmi? You know, in 1947, when India got independence, a lot of girls were named as Swarajya something. Lakshmi is the goddess Lakshmi. Swarajya means a country that is free. So Lakshmi born in independent India, Swarajya Lakshmi. And that time it was a trend and fashion to name many like that, because that was the recent happening. Swami said, no, not Swarajya Lakshmi, Samrajya Lakshmi. Okay, Swami is saying it, they named her. 9 days later, India became a Samrajya. India became a republic on the 26th of January 1950. Well, that's an interesting fact, but the thing is, life is God. Life is subtler than food. That's why we can go without food for some time, but can't go without life. Pranam is subtler than food, and therefore Bhrigu comes and tells his father, I know Brahman. Brahman is pranam. The father then says, okay, somewhat right, but not yet right. Go again, do more penance, find out and come. Bhrigu goes in again. You know, the Bhriguvalli gives us in brief what has happened over so many years. It's a concise documentary that is given to us. But he goes and meditates and does penance and lot of internal search. Then he discovers that, yes, you know, life also begins at some point in time. Maybe not with birth. Maybe the baby is alive a few months before birth. Don't know exactly when, but it begins at a point in time and it ends. God cannot be somebody who has a beginning and an end. Therefore, God can't be just life. He is life, but he's something subtler which can go beyond life. In the Sanatana Dharma, we believe that every individual passes through several lifetimes. And each life is just like a cloth. Just like I change my clothes, I change my bodies. I change my lives. So I don't carry my clothes along, I don't carry my body along, but what I carry along is what is termed as the vasanas. Tendencies. This has been observed, you know, when Shivaji was born, the Maratha ruler, they said as a baby they left him amidst toys. He went straight and picked up a sword. And his guru said that he is going to become a great ruler. Why is it that some babies pick up a bullock cart, while some pick up a car, while some pick up an iPhone, some pick up a sword? There is something, we see that. Two babies growing in the same environment, everything same and yet so much different. In fact, that is a subject of many of Indian Bollywood movies, where twin brothers, one becomes the villain of one becomes the hero of the same movie. It's a very nice concept for them, to show that children of the same mother, and then in the final when he's shooting him, he's about to die, they discover they are brothers and oh, they hug each other and whatever. The basis for that is twins born of the same mother in the same distinct situation, they grow to be so vastly different. And that is not surprising in India, because we feel that is the vasanas, that is the punarjan, previous birth vasanas, we say. Tendencies of his previous birth. How are these tendencies forming? Because of our desires, because of our mind. The mind is a bundle of desires, Swami says. Don't try to eliminate the mind. Swami says, just eliminate your desires. Once you become desireless, there's no mind at all. Because mind is like this cloth, which is made up of so many threads called desires. Pull out all the threads, there's no handkerchief at all. And Swami says, in his discourses, that the mind travels along each birth. That is why we have to do chitta shuddhi. We have to purify the mind. Because the mind, we will not be leaving it behind. Doesn't matter what you do with your wealth. The wealth is very transient. Swami, that's why he says, if wealth is lost, nothing is lost. Health is lost, something is lost. Character is lost, everything is lost. Everything is lost. Because that travels across births. Your mind. And this is what Bhrigu discovers. He comes and tells his father, Father, subtler than the life is the mind, the desire. And his mind is there in everyone, you know. So he comes in and says, Mano Brahme Divya Janat. Desire is divine. Yes, indeed, desire is divine. Actually, I am remembering a little story here as a slight aside. When I say desire is divine, every little desire that comes in our head, that comes in our heart, that comes in us, you know, Swami is aware of every desire. Because after all, desire is divine. So we have to be careful what kind of desire we entertain. I shall not speak right now on what kind of desire to entertain, because that is the next stage in the evolution. But speaking about desires and Swami's knowledge of our desires, this was sometime in 2009. My parents were searching for a groom for my sister. And my mother told me, you pray to Swami that he should send the correct groom. I had written a letter and I had given it to Swami. I remember that day Swami took the letter, started opening it, and started reading it. And Swami seemed to be concentrating, so I thought I'll help Swami, because it's a long letter. So let me assist him. Swami, it's about my sister's marriage, you know. Swami said, yeah, I know. And then I saw that Swami was holding the letter upside down, not like this. He was holding it like this. So I tried to correct it for him, you know. See, all this is Maya. You forget that he doesn't even need to open that paper to understand what is there. But I thought that, no, Swami, this is the way you have to. Swami said, okay, done. And he moved on. So I called my mother and said, Swami saw the letter, he just said done. So I think it's done, he will send you, don't worry. So it so happened that one day during the darshan, the lady who was sitting beside her, she poured out to my mother how she is in search of a bride for her son. And my mother poured out how she is in search of a groom for her daughter. And they said, hey, why not we meet up and check it out? So they agreed. My mother called me and said that, you know, they were in Bombay at that time. They said, we are coming over to visit this boy's home in Bangalore. I said, Mom, you know, before you fix it up, before you see, if you like the boy, you send me a photograph of the boy. Let me show it to Swami. You know, as a confirmation, Swami, that day you said, done, this is the guy, right? Means, I hope we have not landed on the wrong guy. So they agreed. This was the plan. So they will come see the boy. I didn't want to show the boy's photo to Swami before my parents see, you know, because I felt in case Swami says, yeah, good. And my parents say, actually, you know, that boy we are not so happy with. Oh God, now I have to tell them that Swami has liked, so you have to take. So better is you see, if you like, then we'll ask Swami. I felt it's easier to give up something you like rather than accept something you don't like. So that is why I put Swami next in the order of seeking permission. So they went and saw, they liked, my sister also liked. the boy, and apparently the boy liked my sister. Then I told my father, you send a photograph of this boy. So my father asked him for a photograph and sent. Then I saw, boy was fine. He had long hair coming across his forehead, wearing a jeans pant, t-shirt, and he had a stubble. I called up my father and said, you want me to show this photograph to Swami? Tell him to at least shave. Let him grow a beard later on, but while presenting to Swami, I want him shaved. Tell him to comb his hair. So, you know, lot of things. And yet, even in the final photograph, I was not happy because there was a strand of hair falling across his forehead. I have seen Swami used to not like, you know, as a student, whatever, for whatever reason, Swami would like the students to be in spotless whites. He would not like them to have long hair, sideburns, this long, no, mustache, no. Somebody had even said, Swami, you know, mustache is a sign of masculinity. Swami said, what is that? Cockroaches have such long mustaches. It is not a, means that is your own imagination that you think it is a sign of masculinity. You say you want to keep it, you keep it. But personally, Swami would not favor that. So we would all do all of that. So my opinion was, when I'm presenting my going to be brother-in-law, he should also be, and plus he's not wearing whites here, he's in jeans pant. In sharp contrast was my sister's photograph, which I had taken. Dressed in a complete sari, with long hair, hair flower in the hair, neatly, I mean, perfect. An ideal model woman as per Swami, in the physical characteristics at least. So when Swami came in darshan lines, I thought I'll quickly show the brother-in-law's photo and show off my sister's photo when I'm talking. So that is the photo that is there. That is exactly what I did. I said, Swami, now a small point over here. Before I could go for darshan, 2 hours before, my sister calls me. Now when my sister called me, she said, Arvind, what are you going to ask Swami? I said, I'm going to ask Swami whether this boy is right for my sister. She said, no, don't ask like that. Just tell Swami to bless the boy. I said, see, we should not force Swami. We have decided to accept Swami's decision, right? So we'll ask him only. No, please, just tell him to bless the boy. Just tell him that this boy, Swami, bless the boy. Don't ask. I don't want him to tell no. So I said, I got a little irritated actually. Means, I know you may like him and all that, but you like him, you're ready to do away with Swami. That was what I was thinking. So I said, you give the phone to mother. She said, no, mother is not here. I said, okay, give it to father. No, father is not here. Where did they go? They're at home. Then where are you? I'm in Nandi Hills. In Nandi Hills. Nandi Hills is about 40-50 kilometers away from Bangalore. How did you go to Nandi Hills? I have come with Maha. That boy's name was Mahadevan. He has already become Maha for her. I said, you and Maha are in Nandi Hills now. What on earth are you doing? She said, no, that's why I'm telling. Just tell Swami to bless the boy. I just cut the call. I got irritated. I said, what a mess she has done. If Swami gets upset, I thought if Swami gets upset, hell with her. I said, I don't know, Swami, I didn't do all this. You scold her. Don't show that anger on her, on me. That was my plan. So when Swami came for darshan, I got up and showed and said, Swami, this is the boy. And quickly turned the photo away and said, Swami, this is my sister. Swami took the photographs, put my sister's photo below and started looking at that boy's photo. I thought, let me market the boy a little bit. And Swami is actually a Balvika student, Swami. So means, in the sense, he is culturally grounded. Swami, his mother is a singer in the Vrindavan Bhajan group, Swami. She is regular in Vrindavan. And all these pauses. I'm trying to, you know. Swami just looks at me and asks, what did the boy tell the girl? Swami, what did the boy tell the girl? I had no idea. What did the boy tell the girl? I said, Swami, I think the boy is happy with the girl. If Swami blesses, then we'll also be happy. Swami said, Swami is very happy. But find out what boy told the girl. And Swami went off. So I left it at that. I didn't understand what it is. So I called up my sister and said, hey, you know what? Swami said he is happy with this, we can go ahead. And so everything was done, the engagement was fixed, they got engaged. On the marriage day, you know, I was trying to make a video of my sister and I'm trying to shoot. I was interviewing my sister, so I was telling her, tell us about the first meeting, you went to Nandi Hills or not. She says, you know, as we were driving, her going to be husband, he was sharing so many experiences where Swami, though he has not had any physical interactions with Swami, so many things about his career, everything, how from his heart he is getting guidance from Swami. And he said how he has been approached for marriage and so much, and he has been refusing, putting away marriage. Because Swami in his heart was not happy with any offer that came up with anybody. And in fact, he thought he is not going to marry also. And then he stops the car, gets out of the car, hands over a bouquet of flowers to my sister and says, but the Swami in my heart says that this is perfect. Will you agree to be my wife? And she's so overwhelmed and she says, yes, I will be. And then they're returning back home and she's sitting in the car and thinking, oh my God, now this brother of mine is going to ask Swami. Swami says, no, what will happen? She doesn't know that the Swami who prompts from the heart and the Swami who sits here in Prashanthi Nilayam is one and the same. I realized it much later, and then it struck me, Swami is asking, what did the boy tell the girl? What did the boy tell? I had no idea that the boy had told something to the girl. You know, that made it clear to me that possibly even as the desire is arising in our heart, Swami knows it already. The desire itself is divine. In fact, on one occasion, when one of the teachers, one of the former teachers of the university, he had the opportunity to serve Swami in his room. So one day he saw Swami leafing through all the letters. Swami will see the letter like this, keep it on the side, pick another letter, not even look at it, throw it in the dustbin. Take a third letter, just tear it up. Fourth letter, open and read it for half an hour. He had no problem with Swami reading a letter for so long. But he definitely felt, Swami, some of the letters you are not even seeing what is there inside. You are just chucking it in the dustbin. It's not fair for that devotee, Swami. You know, when Maya comes, we often think that our love and compassion for people is more than the God's love. We see one poor person and Lord help this person, how much he's struggling. As if the Lord needs my recommendation, the Lord doesn't know. My heart has melted for him, Lord, yours has not melted, please melt for him. We think like that, you know. So here also the sir is standing there and thinking like this. Swami, how can you just throw it away? Suddenly Swami picks another letter and calls him and says, open this letter. Yes, Swami, it has been written to you. No problem, open it. He opens it. Swami says, now, go to that second page. See, he is happy. How the daughter of his, you know, the details Swami narrates. And now how he is grateful about that. And the sir is saying, oh my God, everything. Without even opening, without even reading, because he has only torn open the cover. So nice, no? Swami takes back the letter, throws it in the dustbin and continues doing what he was doing. And sir knows, this teacher knows that this is in response to his doubt that Swami has done like this. So actually we should be grateful to him for asking the question that he asked. He went to Swami and he said, Swami, why should we write letters to you then? You know everything, no? Why should we write letters? It's such a futile exercise. Swami explained to him that if you think that you are writing letters for me, you are mistaken. Do you think you are speaking to Swami for Swami's information? Hey boy, where did you come from? Swami, you know. What's your name? Swami, you know. How old are you? Swami, you know. Shut up, yesterday you told me, Swami, speak to me, I am speaking and you are saying, you know. I am not speaking to you to gain information. I am speaking to you because you want the joy of me speaking to you. Yesterday you prayed that I should speak to you. So, you write a letter to God for your own benefit. Swami said, you have a thought. Manas ekam, vachas ekam, karmanyekam, mahatmanam. One who has unity in thought, word and deed is a great person. Not only unity and purity of thought, word and deed. That is called Trikarana Shuddhi. Swami says that is the thing that defines a great person. When you have a thought, you make it into word and Now we can actually make it into Word because we do it in Microsoft Word. And then you make the put it into the deed of writing it. Thought, word and deed, that unity comes. You become a great person. That is why you write letters. You don't write letter to Swami because Swami doesn't know what is in your heart. Swami doesn't know your desire. He knows. You write it for your own benefit. Many times we desire so many things in mind, but we feel ashamed. Suppose I am a child and I want to ask my mother, sometimes I feel, no, actually I don't want it. I just got a desire. Sometimes our desire we may even express in words, but when it actually comes to fulfilling the desire, we back out. We say, no need. Only that desire which we are able to have unity in thought, word and deed is a desire that we truly desire, we can make out. There was this lady who kept telling Swami, give me moksha, give me moksha, Swami, give me moksha. Swami kept delaying, denying actually, apparently. So it became like a practice. Swami, moksha. Swami, moksha. One day when she said, Swami, moksha, Swami said, come to interview room, now. Swami, no, wait, I will tell my husband, Swami, please just give me some, let me wrap up my stuff and come. Many times it becomes a lip service, what we desire. Do we actually desire what we desire? We ourselves don't know what is it that we are desiring. That is why many times Swami says, you don't desire. Adugakuve o manasa, o mind, don't desire. Don't ask. Because you will ask for something very, very low, much lower than what I desire to give you. Just shut up and sit. I will give you what you need. So, desire is divine. That is where we came from. So Bhrigu comes and tells his father, desire, desire is God. Because everything is sustained by even life, you know, even prana. Actually, if you see, the act of procreation takes place because of desire. If there is no desire, there is no life created. The desire is inbuilt as an instinct in all animals, in every creature. That is what creates life. If not for the desire, nothing would happen. If you look at National Geographic, you will see the kind of things the animals do for the mate. They bang their heads, they ram against their, kill themselves. Why? They can happily eat the grass that is available and go their way when it comes to a deer. Lions, they kill each other because their desire is so strong. If not for that desire, the species of lion will not go ahead. That desire is needed. It is subtler than life itself. That is why Mano Brahme Divya Janat. The mind is divine. Swami also says, that's how it is. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayo. The mind is responsible for your liberation and bondage. Depends how you use it. And therein lies the clue as to why Varuna tells, no Bhrigu, wrong. Mind is also God, correct. Food is God, agreed. Life is God, agreed. Mind is also God, agreed. But mind alone is not God. God is subtler than the mind. Go find out. Because just now, as I said, Swami says, mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayo. Mind, mana eva means mind alone. Manushyanam means for man. Karanam bandha mokshayo means cause for bondage and liberation. The clue is here, because why does Swami say mana eva manushyanam? Why not mana eva jantunam karanam bandha mokshayo? Why is the mind or desire not responsible for the uplift or downfall of all animals? All animals have desire. All animals procreate, eat food, sleep. Why is it that it is said that this is responsible for birth or liberation or bondage of only man? Because man has an ability which is subtler and higher than the mind, which can actually control this desire. Channelize the desire. You will never see an animal choosing to be a celibate. Never. If at all an animal is a celibate, it was because it was not strong enough to defeat the strongest male in the pack over there. That's all. You will never see an animal choosing to do fasting. Navaratri, 9 days I will fast, I will eat only some. No. This ability to channel desires. Just look at it. Simple things in our life. I am working on a project in office. It's important to complete it. I have to eat 3 times a day. Those who keep pet lions, pet tigers, circuses and some crazy people who keep these dangerous pets, they have realized you don't feed the tiger on time. You have taken care of the tiger all its life. Yet you don't give it two meals, it may lunge at your throat. Because it is driven by instinct, it needs to feed, that's it. If you are hungry for 4 days and your mother comes in, you won't lunge at her throat and try to eat her. What is it that stops you from fulfilling that desire though you are so hungry? I am working on a project, I give up food, I give up drink, I don't sleep one night, though I am feeling sleepy, because I feel project is important. I want to come for Prashanti, you are not going to get leave. I resign from my job, oh my God, this is the one that is feeding my family, no problem. I need the job, I need the money, yet I resign and come to have darshan. What is the thing that makes us do it? Because there is something that is higher than the mind, that channels the mind, that channels the desires, that we call as a discrimination that is born from knowledge. I know that all the jobs in the world is not worth a moment at Swami's lotus feet, so I'll give it up. I know I can skip two sessions of food if I can complete my project in time, because it's going to affect in whatever way. I am able to discriminate and choose because I have that knowledge. That is what distinguishes humans from animals. That is why an animal can't. I used to many times wonder, you know, when I see National Geographic Channel, the tiger will be sitting there, lion will be sitting there, it has had its full. So many zebras and deer will be walking past. I used to feel, you foolish lion, just swipe one zebra there, you know, it'll fulfill your tomorrow's food needs. It doesn't know to plan. It'll just sit like that only. Tomorrow when I'm hungry, I'll go searching for food. But we are not like that. We save up retirement fund, this fund, that fund, life insurance, all that. We have knowledge. We are able to plan. We are able to think of the past. That the animal can't do. It can only live in the present. In some ways, it's a blessing for the animal. Because we try to live in the present. And we live only in the past and future instead. It's actually given as an additional bonus. Apart from living in the present, humans, you can live in the past if you wish to, so that you can learn lessons from there. You can live in the future if you wish to, so that you can plan. And that is what Bhrigu discovers. You know, he comes back and tells to his father, Vijnanam Brahme Divya Janat. Knowledge is divine. Knowledge is able to direct our desires, which gives rise to life, which is actually the body. So knowledge is divine. Knowledge is the ultimate. That is what Bhrigu discovers. And it more or less seems complete at this point. However, there is only one little problem with the point that knowledge is divine. What is that problem? Before going to that next level, the ultimate level, where we will try to define and understand what is the meaning of Hridaya, heart. One more little incident over here. Irrespective of what our desire is, God is the embodiment of knowledge who knows our intention through and through. It's like that Upanishadic story, you know, where a guru gives his disciples bananas and says, eat this banana where nobody is seeing you. So some people go under a blanket, one more boy goes underwater and eats, one person hides in a barn. Everybody comes next day with their banana eaten, with stories of how they did it. There's only one boy who still has got the banana. And the guru asks him, why is it? Why didn't you eat the banana? He says, Guru, I could never find a place, such a place where nobody will be aware that I ate the banana. Why? Because Guru, whether anyone is aware or not, I am aware that I ate the banana. So wherever I eat it, I know I am eating it, unless in my sleep eating I do. Even there in my sleep, I know that I am eating a banana. Whether in a sleeping dream or a waking dream, I know that I am eating the banana. So there is no way for me to eat a banana without anybody knowing it. If you are told, eat a banana, one person can know, that's enough. Then I would have eaten. But I can't eat. That is the kind of omnipresence that the Lord has. That is why Swami says, Sahasra Shirusha Purushaha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat Sarvata Panipadam Tat Sarvatokshi Shiromukham. Which means, He has 1,000 hands, 1,000 legs, 1,000 eyes. And Swami says it doesn't mean that He is one sculpture piece with 1,000 heads and 1,000 hands. Swami says, those days the population was so low, there were only about 1,000 people in the community. And so they said, whichever head you see is God's head. So they said, God has 1,000 heads. Today we have to tell crore heads, billion heads. It doesn't mean God is a museum piece like that. It just means that whichever head you see, whichever hand you see is God's head, it's God's hand. God is omnipresent. So we can't hide our intention. So when we are not truthful to ourselves, when we have some thought, you know, some of us, we will not be good, but we appear to be good. And it seems to work in the world. It doesn't work with God. It doesn't work in the long run. Because in the night when I'm not able to sleep with a clean conscience, nobody can get me sleep. The softest of beds, the best air-conditioned rooms cannot get me sleep the way a man with a clean conscience can sleep. Many poets have written on this concept. They said that if you can't look at the man in the mirror in the eye, your life is not worth living. The man in the mirror is nothing but the conscience. In fact, Swami would say, if you get very angry, look at yourself in the mirror. Such an ugly face, it will be immediately you will change it. Because you don't want to feel like the owner of such an ugly face. Anybody looks ugly when they are angry. Anybody looks sweet when they smile. That is a beauty, right? So, we can't hide anything from God. Again, I am tempted, you know. And when I am tempted to narrate about Swami's experience, the best way to counter this temptation, I feel, is to yield to it. So, I yield to it. This was a time when 1998-99, the Kulwant Hall, the gold plating work was going on. You know, wherever the devotees sit, if you look above, everything is in gold, that's actual real gold. Thin gold sheets. They wanted to plate Swami's room and residence in gold. Swami said, no. Where the devotees sit, make it gold. I mean, this is so wonderful, right? What a relationship of love it is, where the devotee is thinking of the Lord and Lord is thinking of the devotee. The devotee wants to make the sanctum sanctorum in gold. Swami said, no, don't make that. Make where devotees sit in gold. So because this was going on, Kulwant Hall was shut. And Darshan used to be in the Purnachandra auditorium. So that was the time when I got this desire that I want Swami to sign a photograph that I had taken. That was my desire. See, why I am narrating this incident is also to show that the means matter as much as the ends. You know, in the divine diary, you cannot say that he did good no matter what his means were. You can't say a person is building a hospital. So what if he is robbing some people? He is building a hospital. No, hospital is a good thing. No. Swami says the goal is dharma. The means have to be dharma. You cannot separate the means and the ends. You cannot tell a person that, you know what, let me murder you because this patient needs an eye, this patient needs a liver transplant, this patient needs a heart, this patient needs a kidney. So I'll just murder you, pluck out all these and give. I'm saving 4 lives. So no problem, right? No. No problem. It is a problem. You can't. You can't murder a man to just... Because it's not only about what you're doing. It's not about giving life to 4 people. How are you doing? The means are equally important. Possibly we can have a separate talk on this topic itself, the means versus the ends. The means have to be in sync with the ends. So yeah, when I got the desire that Swami should sign a photograph, it's a good desire. What happened was, it was my birthday and I was sitting there with the tray of so many things, you know, all these dry fruits which Swami will bless, some akshata grains, and then this photograph. Because I felt that if it's your birthday, it's your birthright to get a photograph signed. Swami has to sign because it's my birthday. That day, Swami did not sign anybody's photos. In fact, he picked up the marker, put it on the photograph, and just changed his mind after that, closed back the marker and went away. So I had just a dot. Instead of with love, Baba, I had the dot on top of the eye there, done. The remaining Vitlav Baba was remaining to be written. So I thought, okay, next day let me try again. So next day what happened was, I went and sat in the same area with the photograph. Again Swami did not sign. So usually in the hostel it was a system that if one day you don't get your job done, you can try for one more day. But after that you have to give up because there are others also in line, right? So I left it. The next day onward again Swami started signing. Who were sitting there as birthday boy, Swami is signing their photograph. I felt cheated. So I went and took a separate permission slip to sit in the front to get a photograph signed. I told the warden that I want Swami to sign the photograph, please sir. I showed him the photograph. It was a Shivratri photograph of Swami sitting on a chair. He also said okay. So that day when I'm sitting in the front there, Swami comes, signs others' photographs, looks at me and says, hey, not birthday boy. No, I felt cheated again. Swami, when I was birthday boy, you didn't sign. Now we are telling I'm not birthday boy. This went on for many days. After so many days, I gave up. I gave up not because I felt I should not go in the front. I gave up because the warden said, enough. Enough of you sitting in front. It is evident that Swami does not want to sign, so leave it. So that is what had happened. Then I thought, now let me make a plan to trap Swami. See, this is where it comes, the means and the ends, what I am saying. So I began to pray, Swami, just accept my letter, Swami. Please accept my letter, please accept my letter. This was my prayer, safe prayer, right? And I felt that 2 weeks of prayer is enough, the prayer letter has got enough backing to be accepted. Then I wrote the letter in which I wrote, P.S. Swami, if you accept this letter, you are promising me that tomorrow I will get the photo and you will sign it. I felt, if I make Swami accept this letter now, unknown to him, he is giving me this promise. He has to sign my photograph. Next day when Swami came, he took my letter. And I said, that's it Swami, now you are trapped. Your name is Satya Sai Baba. First word is Satya. You better stick to it now. I have told you I will get the photograph tomorrow and you will sign it. You sign it tomorrow. So I was very happy that I had trapped Swami. See, that is the thing, you can't get God by intelligence actually. I thought I could get him. I found out that the next day our class is going last in the lines as per the order. So I had to sit in front because half of the deal is I will get the photograph. Second half of the deal is you have to sign the photograph. If I don't take the photograph, then Swami can say you didn't get it. Correct? So I went to the warden and I said, sir, please let me go in the front. Because today I am confident Swami will sign. So he said, why are you confident? I didn't feel like telling him that, you know, I had trapped Swami and I didn't know how it would be taken. I just said, I don't know, sir. I have that feeling, you know, somewhere I am feeling that Swami will sign. Then warden said, you see, from what I have seen in the past, Swami has not signed at all. So I think you wait for 1 or 2 days, then you go. No, sir, I have to go today. Today only I have to go. Warden got a little irritated. He said, you think you know better or I know better? Actually, I felt like saying I know better, but I dared not say it. So I said, sir, you know better. He said, then go. We'll see after 2-3 days. So I came off outside without the... And I was last in the lines and I felt, Swami, you have beaten me. Because I have not managed to get the photograph. That day as we are coming for darshan, there is one more special opportunity. You know, some days Swami would come to the Kulwant hall to supervise what is going on before darshan. So on such days, when our lines are entering, we would enter from the lady side gate and go and enter Purnachandra. If we are entering and we see Swami in Kulwant hall, the class which is last in the lines can sit along the path between the lady side exit and Purnachandra entrance. It's a special opportunity for the class which is last. Because they will not be getting a, in quotes, good darshan, no? They will be last, that's why. Now, our class was last and I saw Swami was in Kulwant hall. And I happened to sit in the first line along the path. And I said, oh my God, I didn't get the photograph. What a mistake I made. And then I realized my mistake. What was my mistake? That in that letter I wrote, Swami, by tomorrow you will sign. So I rewrote another letter. Swami, if you accept this letter, it means that within the next 1 month you will sign. Because I felt 1 month, no, someday I will get and come. One day was the problem. That was a mistake I had made. I still didn't realize what was the actual mistake I was making, that I was trying to trap the Lord in cunning and intelligence. And so, okay, this didn't go. I shouted because I thought the mic would have gone. And so, I was sitting there with this letter, and Swami was walking back. For some reason, Swami said, "Boys, I'm going from that gate." And I said, "Oh my God, I should not lose her." So we all got up and we knelt and said, "Swami, please, Swami, Swami, please." Swami said, "You please, Swami, then I'll come." You know, so beautiful. You tell please, Swami, Swami will tell please, Swami. You make Swami happy. But anyway, he came. And when he came, I got up and blocked off the path. I felt like, till you take this letter, Swami, you can't go. And he took the letter. And I said, "That's it. I've trapped you now. Within 1 month, surely I'll be getting the letter. And you will have to sign the photograph. I will be getting the photograph, you have to sign it." And Swami goes, enters Purnachandra auditorium. And we are all now getting up to rush and sit in the darshan hall in Purnachandra. As we are getting up, one of Swami's security guards, "Sairam, Sairam," he's shouting. What happened? Apparently, Swami, before entering the Purnachandra door, he dropped one letter and entered. Swami, who is this letter? Guess whose letter it is? I went and saw my handwriting there and I picked it up and said, "Oh my God, out of all those 50-60 letters, he is able to drop only this letter." And then, you know, I was like, you know, shocked, and I was feeling very sad. One of the senior brothers comes to me and tells, "Brother, you have folded it so small, you know, it slipped between Swami's fingers. Put it in big envelope, then it won't fall." I wanted to tell him that, "No, you don't know. You don't know the history behind this letter." Actually, I got my first photo signed by Swami 8-9 months after that, when Darshan shifted back to Kulwant Hall. That is another long story in itself. No time to yield to that temptation. Maybe I'll yield to it a little bit. So I went and sat. It was 8 months later, and I remember I used to every day have this desire, "Swami, I want to get a photo signed, a photo signed, a photo signed." I became such a menace there that one of the boys who used to walk behind Swami came and told, "Next time you pester Swami, I'm not going to allow you to sit here at all. He doesn't want to sign your photograph, don't keep pestering him." That was a warning for me. So I decided I would stop. I would still, you know, I used to get 6 different photographs so that Swami can sign anyone. I stopped after that. One day, I remember, almost 10 days after that, I'm sitting there. I had come there to photograph if Swami is blessing any of the birthday boys. That was one thing, you know, those days we didn't have digital camera, so very few people had cameras, and those who had cameras will be requested by those who are going for birthday blessing, saying that, "You come along with me, sit somewhere close by, and as Swami blesses me, take a photograph." So I used to every time go and sit in the front, because I am taking somebody's or the other's photograph. That day Swami comes, he blesses all the birthday boys, signs photographs for them, goes in. This was in the veranda, VIP portico. Then after darshan, he just comes walking out and he sees some primary school boys are sitting there among the birthday boys. Swami asks, "I signed your photo?" He says, "Yes, Swami." I am sitting and thinking, oh my God, he's asking them also. And mine, 9 months over, you know, by now delivery happens for anybody else. When will my deliverance come? And then Swami says, "You have any other photo?" And the boy pulls out one photograph. Swami takes that and signs. "Only one?" Full now rummages his pocket and pulls out one more. Old some photograph. Swami signs. "Only two?" "Yes, Swami." "Anybody else?" I'm thinking, oh God, is this the time? Is this the time to... I saw in my book there was one photograph. Shall I get it signed? As I'm holding the photograph, I see that man behind Swami. He's looking at that. Waiting for me to rise. No need. I put it back. You know, these mediums of Swami, very scary. Through whom Swami decides to act. So I just put it back. Anyway, I was sitting there looking at Swami. Swami then looks at me and says, "Photo?" "Yes, Swami." But I'm going on, means I'm trying to indicate to that guy that, you know, Swami is asking actually. And Swami then said, "Give." I took out that photo and gave it to him. And he says, "Why didn't you get a pad? Why are you hesitating?" the boys, they don't understand. I'm asking here who wants photo and he's not even telling. All the Swami is telling. But Swami signed with love, Baba. That's the only photograph that I've got which Swami has signed. That was the story of the photograph. But you see, our desires may be good, but the means we adopt to achieve those desires, if they are not good, the Lord doesn't respond, because the intention, the means are as important as the desire. That is why, you know, this Vijnana becomes important. God is knowledge. God is knowledge. He knows everything. Every little intention, why you are doing the act, He knows it. That's why it is said, God sees the feeling behind the act, not the act. That is actually a boon for us also, you know. Because God doesn't judge us by the results we are producing. He is judging us by the efforts we are putting in. I may not be able to produce results like somebody, but I can definitely put in 100% effort like somebody, right? And if I am able to put in 100% effort like somebody, then I am equal to that somebody in the eyes of God. I may not be able to sing like Lata Mangeshkar. I may not be able to play cricket like Sachin Tendulkar or play football like Pele. But I can put in the efforts that they put in. And if I put in that efforts, God will give me also a chance to sing. How many of us have got chance to sing? If it is based on our skill and ability to perform, none of us would have got the opportunity to sing in front of Swami. But Swami sees the effort. Because Swami is Jnana, God is knowledge. He knows. That is what Bhrigu discovers. But the father says, Varuna, he says, no, my son, God is knowledge, but he is subtler than knowledge. God is not knowledge, not knowledge alone. Go do more penance. Because the only problem with God being knowledge is, as I said, this knowledge is accessible only to humans. It is an exclusive property for human beings alone. Only they can discriminate right and wrong, good and bad. Animals don't discriminate. A lion never feels guilty of killing a deer. It is not able to discriminate. It is just following. It stops at the mind level. So if I define God by something that is exclusive to human beings, it goes against God, because God is not an exclusive thing, exclusive being. God is all inclusive. God is there for the tree, for the stone, for the chair. So God can't be just knowledge. He's subtler than knowledge. He's something far subtle that's all inclusive, all encompassing. What is that? That is what Bhrigu went to discover. And he comes back and says, Father, Anandam Brahme Divya Janath. God is bliss, Ananda. Father says, right. Now you have got it right. But after that, you know, his father continues to tell him that at the same time, you continue to revere food as God. Annam is Brahma, Pranam is Brahma, Mano is Brahma, Vijnanam is Brahma. But remember, Brahman is subtler than all this. Anandam is Brahma. And Anandam, you know, everybody feels. When Krishna was born, nature rejoiced. When Swami was born, musical instruments played. How? Where does that have prana? The musical instrument doesn't have life. It doesn't have mind. Yet it rejoices. How? That is something very subtle. That is what science cannot explain. How can doing yajna help in getting rains? In fact, the chief minister of the state, Chandrababu Naidu, was criticized because he said, everybody do yajnas, we are not having rain. We have had beautiful rains now. Now people will say, hey, come on, this is not due to yajna. This was the monsoon, suddenly this westerly wind came, it turned, it came. They can all say what happened, why it happened, they can't say. And since there is no way to conclusively prove that this is the result of the yajna, there is nothing that we can also say. But we can go by Swami's word. Swami says those who criticize yajnas as foolish are like people who go to the farmer and say, when you can eat the rice grains, why are you foolishly throwing it into the ground? The farmer will tell, you are foolish, you don't realize, I am throwing one bag of grains into the ground, it will give me 500 bags of grain. Swami says, that is what happens when you do a yajna. Rain clouds are formed from particles and smoke. Swami says, it is that rain that gives rise to food, annam. That food, blood and head are related. That food determines the quality of your blood, which determines the quality of your head, which determines the quality of your thought, the quality of your life. So it is so important, that rain. And that rain, do you want it to be formed out of particulate matter which are being emitted from industries and vehicular exhaust? How beautiful if that cloud is formed from particulate matter that is charged with mantras. And that is pure smoke. You see, it will not be black smoke that emanates from the yagna. It will be white smoke, fully oxidized. Even scientifically. The best form of smoke it is. So there is, I mean, I can go off into that, but I'm referring myself. So, one thing that everything can feel is ananda. And ananda is not happiness. It is not the happiness as we know it. It is an awareness. Ananda means that awareness. The awareness that made the musical instruments know that the avatar has taken birth. The awareness that makes the clouds know that here this penance is going on. That awareness is ananda. Swami beautifully explains, he says, when you say Satchitananda, Satchit Ananda, Sat, Sat is being, existence. Existence everything has. The tree has existence, the podium has existence, the mic has existence. But what everything doesn't have is awareness. Awareness of the existence, you know, that is beautiful. Even in science, there is this paradox, where they say, it is not enough if there is intelligence. The intelligence should be intelligent enough to know that it is intelligent. We are not only intelligent, we know we are intelligent. That's why we can build on it and go on. We can communicate, pass on. What our ancestors learned 2000 years ago, I need not learn that. That I have taken for granted. I can build on. I can stand on the shoulders of my ancestors and look further. That is what the animals are not able to do. That is why dolphins, though however intelligent, they remain dolphins. Chimps, however intelligent, they remain chimps. Because though they are intelligent, they do not know that they are intelligent. They do not know what it means to be less intelligent. We know that because awareness. It is that awareness that makes us stand out. And Swami says, being is water, awareness is sugar. Sat and Chit, water and sugar, when you mix it, the sugar syrup that you get, that is ananda. And that is what Swami says, being, awareness, bliss always, that is Baba. Satchit Ananda Swarupa, being, awareness and bliss. And this Hridaya, when Swami says heart, is the seat of that awareness. The residence of that awareness, where that awareness is, that is the heart. When Swami says, God is the residence of heart, it is nothing but saying that this awareness is God. And Swami says, not ordinary awareness, constant integrated awareness. You know, when we sit in a satsang, when we sit in a bhajan, when we are seeing Swami's darshan, suddenly we feel that expansion love, we feel that love towards everyone. We feel very broad-hearted, we feel broad-minded. We are experiencing that divine oneness. But after that is gone, next time when I am fighting with an auto rickshaw driver or in a shop haggling for a discount, I have forgotten that. So Swami says it should not be ordinary awareness. It has to be constant integrated awareness. Always, always aware. And if we are able to do that, we will be able to see Satya Sai as a Hridaya Vasini. If we are constantly aware of that power that is pervading everything, me and you included. When Ramana Maharshi was asked, what should I do to discover the divine, to complete the greatest quest in life? I believe he answered, Chumairo. Just be there. Chumairo means in a way of saying, just sit. You don't do anything. Because all that is needed is to become aware of that existence. That's all. Because when being and awareness, Sat and Chit come together, Ananda is the result. And Anandam Brahme Divya Janat, that bliss, that seat of that bliss is the heart. You know, just to differentiate between bliss and happiness, we should not confuse that when I'm feeling happy, I eat a gulab jamun, I feel happy. That is not bliss. It's like when you are having that awareness, it is like watching a movie. You watch a movie, whether it's a tragedy or a horror or a comedy. You go through the tragedy or comedies because you want to enjoy the movie. Right? Why do you watch a tragedy when you know it's tragic? Because, you know, I enjoy it. Come on, after all, it's not real. It's an illusion. You know that it's not real. Once you know it's not real, you are able to enjoy a tragedy. Once you know it's not real, you are able to enjoy horror. That is how it is. We go and watch all sorts of movies, right? Because we know it's not real, we are able to enjoy it. That is bliss. Happiness is, I feel happy when the hero wins, I feel sad when he gets hit. Then I'm dependent on that movie, what happens. Here, I don't care whatever happens in the movie, I'm fine. Because I'll enjoy whatever, it's just entertainment, that's all. That is why when somebody used to come and tell Swami, Swami, I got a job, manchidi, very good. Swami, my father passed away, manchidi. What on earth, what is this man saying? I'm telling him my father died and he's telling good. Because it's like somebody coming and telling, you know what, that fellow got shot, it's a movie, fine, no problem, let him get shot. He'll be there acting again next movie, right? That is bliss. So, my prayer is, Swami, we are able to discover you as the Hridaya Vasini by being aware always, constant integrated awareness. Maybe before I conclude, one more little incident, one beautiful episode where another teacher of mine, when he got the opportunity, Swami had asked him, you know, he was doing his graduation at Anantpur in the Krishna Devaraya University, because that time our university was not there. He is currently the warden at Vrindavan, Dr. T. Ravikumar. So, Swami, he had come for darshan. Swami had called him for an interview. There was one senior member sitting there. Swami asked him, why did you come to Puttaparthi? So, Ravikumar said, Swami, I came for darshan. Why do you want darshan? Swami, because it gives me bliss. Swami, it gives you bliss or it gives you happiness? Swami, it gives me bliss. What is the difference? And he says, it was purely Swami's grace that the answer came that way. Such a magical answer. He said, Swami, when you eat gulab jamun, that is happiness. Because when you eat it, you enjoy it. But there is a limit to which you can eat. First, gulab jamun, awesome. Two, terrific. Three, fantabulous. Four, five, no. Six, definitely I'll vomit now. Swami's darshan is not like that. One, two, three, oh, I want more, more, more. Amazon has come up with its ad in India. It says, or dikhao, means show, give me more. They want to start consumerism. That doesn't actually work. But with case of God, it is really correct. Or dikhao, we want more, more, more. And then another beautiful point he made about happiness and bliss. He said, Swami, 5 years from now, if I am hungry, I am pining for food and I don't have food. Somebody comes and tells me, you remember 5 years back you ate that gulab jamun? That doesn't give me happiness, Swami. In fact, it makes me more miserable if I think of the gulab jamun that I had that time. But Swami, 5 years from now, if I am at a place where I am not able to see Swami, at that time if somebody comes and tells, 5 years back, remember Swami's darshan there? Swami, the bliss that I was feeling 5 years back, the same bliss comes back. It's permanent, Swami. That is the difference between bliss and happiness. Isn't it? Because if it was not bliss, how can we relive what had happened that time and feel joy now also? We smile now also when we relive Swami's episodes. That is bliss. And that bliss, that ananda can come when every moment of our lives we live in sat and chit like we are doing now. Because right now as we are listening to Swami's glories, we are existing. And we are aware of our existence. We have no idea of what is cooking at home. We have no idea what's happening in the world. We don't know if some bomb has been dropped somewhere. Nothing we know. We are existing and we are aware of our existence. It is only when we are like that we are able to enjoy bliss. Our prayer and endeavor must be to live in that awareness all through our life. Because it is the seat of that awareness that we call as Hridaya. And it is only when we are living in that awareness will we be able to enjoy the omnipresence of Hridaya Nivasini Sai. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram. We'll just conclude with Samastha Loka. Om Samastalokaha Sukhino Bhavantu Samastalokaha Sukhino Bhavantu Samastalokaha Sukhino Bhavantu Om Shanti 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 Jai Bolo Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba Ji Ki Jai.